We are thrilled here on the WBGO Journal to bring three generations of jazz educators together to talk about the Jazz Power Initiative. And what a treat. We have the 2010 NEA Jazz Master, Kenny Barron, joining us on the Journal. Kenny, great to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us is the artistic director and co-founder of the Jazz Power Initiative, pianist, composer, singer, producer, educator, and don't forget former WBGO announcer Eli Yeaman. Eli, always great to see you and welcome back.
Great to be here, Doug. Thanks for having me.
And someone who was a student at one point for Eli Yeaman is Brian Fender, the multi-talented performer, actor, musician, and teaching artist. And he joined the Jazz Power Initiative after learning about the jazz foundations and history from Eli at Marymount Manhattan College. And of course, you might say, hey, wasn't he in Spike Lee's Black Klansman? Great to see you, Brian.
Oh, it's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Doug.
And you have the best hair, by the way, of all of us. So
thank you.
Definitely.
We have to make note of that. Let's first talk about what has already happened. The 15 inspiring years of transforming lives through jazz arts education. It was a musical celebration that took place in late May in New York, the 15th anniversary celebration of the Jazz Power Initiative. And the person who was honored at that event is the great Kenny Barron. What did that mean to you, Kenny? You've had so many honors through the course of your amazing career. To be honored by the JPI, did that mean something to you?
Yes, it does. It means quite a bit. It was thrilling for me, first of all, to receive the honor, but also to see the work that Eli Yeaman's been doing with these young people. It is really incredible, and I'm quite proud of him, actually.
When it comes to education, this is something that's been a part of your life from early on, from your brother being an educator
right,
to then you, Seth Lateef, saying, why don't you go on and pursue higher ed? Why did he say that to you? You and I spoke about this very early on before we started this interview. Everybody that you've come in contact with, maybe James Mooney seeing you at the five spot, everybody already knew that you were talented. But to want to help you, there has to be something inside Kenny Barron that they said, this is a guy that we want to see succeed. What is it about you?
I wish I knew. Hopefully, I think it's they saw my thirst for knowledge and willingness to go one step beyond. And I think that's what they saw.
So, Eli, perfect segue into you. Obviously, being a pianist and composer yourself and working with kids, what a passion you have. When we watch the video of you talking about the JPI, you just like bounce off the screen because you're so excited about helping young people. You've got four great programs, but you also have now a special weekend coming up. Tell us about it.
Well, thanks, Doug. Kenny was my teacher at Rutgers 30 years ago, and he provided such an example of how you can be an artist and somebody who's really committed to passing along knowledge. And I've strived to walk that road myself. And it does give me great excitement to be able to share my love of jazz with teenagers, in particular, kids in middle school and high school. And we have our Jazz Power Youth Workshop has 26 kids from Harlem, Washington Heights, in Manhattan, some from the Bronx and Brooklyn as well. We meet at the United Palace once a week for 3.5 hours a week. And we're coming up on our culmination of this 12-week cycle with these wonderful young people. They will be performing Nora's Ark, the jazz musical I co-wrote with Clifford Carlson. It's a musical about climate change and about working with people that you may not even like to solve big problems.
I've tracked the cumulus, the stratus, the nimbus up above. I've mapped the genome of gorilla, the blood count of the dove. I've plucked the heartbeat of hyena and the temperature of mud. It's gonna rain, the poles will melt, the earth is gonna flood. It's gonna rain. Ice is melting fast, no time to explain. The skies are overcast.
and we're performing it on Sunday at 3 o'clock at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem, which is on 129th Street and Lenox. And then we'll perform it again on Monday up in Washington Heights at 21 Wadsworth Avenue at Iglesia Presbyteriana, which I understand they're actually filming in the Heights, the movie version, and but they are going to honor their agreement to make some room for us to come in and perform 7 o'clock Monday, June 24th at Iglesia Presbyteriana.
So a big weekend and Monday event for you, Brian. Tell us your role in Noah's Ark.
Oh, well, specifically in Noah's Ark, you know, we me, Mickey, and Eli came together as a team last year, you know, teaching this 12-week workshop. And we had the idea to do the musical, but, you know, for a little bit, we were hesitant to do it with new students. But it's a challenge that we took on this year. So I am the theater specialist, in a sense. What that really means is, so at Marymount Manhattan, where I worked with Eli, I studied musical theater. So just kind of putting together jazz with the acting elements as well, like making sure that the kids are clear about telling a story and also, you know, being larger than life, learning how to use their voice and express themselves through their bodies and their imagination as well. So I really, my number one thing is to get them to be their best selves and teach them what it takes to be a performer, which is not just about, you know, the singing, acting, and the dancing, but it's also the respect that comes with it. It's being able to work as a team, to listen to each other, the discipline, doing your own homework, you know, your own research, that you can then bring something new to the table and fresh to the project. You know, the cool thing about the program is that a lot of our kids are, you know, smart, and they're becoming so much smarter as well, and it's reflecting in their school. It's their music teachers, even when they talk to us, you know, they really enjoy the program. The principals at the different schools, you know, are also raving about, you know, just the impact and the effects that we've had on their students and on their community. So It's really important work, and I'm really proud. I didn't think that I would be doing this kind of work so soon out of school, but it's you know, it's honestly more than a dream, because, you know, I couldn't even fathom doing this kind of work at this magnitude so early. But I'm very grateful and very blessed for this program and for Eli and Mickey and Antoinette Montague, who have all become mentors and family to me. So, you know, being able to take their information and their wealth of knowledge, and then, you know, the learning never stops, and then also be able to not only pass that down to the younger kids, but also to learn from them, to keep being inspired by these younger kids, you know, just the energy that a lot of them have, and also the passion to just live, especially in that when you're young and you're a child. So, you know, I'm sure Eli can also attest to this, just the infectiousness that the youthful spirit can have on, you know, an adult's mind and soul is very impactful. And I think we take it for granted because, you know, we get so jaded as we become older. But, you know, I love it because it's really keeping me young. It's keeping me spirited and wanting me to match their energy.
You mentioned two words to me, which these two words may be the key to everything. You mentioned passion, but earlier on you mentioned respect.
Mm.
And one thing that I love about the Jazz Power Initiative is the fact that we bring youth and elders and respect between the two. You're sitting across from the great Kenny Barron right now. What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, it really means a lot. I remember, listening to Kenny, and then also Eli bringing up the fact that he was trained by Kenny, which made me want to go listen more and just be more in tune with the culture, because you know you hear about the greats and you hear these names all the time, and you know it's so important, I feel like, especially in my position, you know, as someone younger who you know is newer to jazz, to make sure that I'm honoring these greats who did come before us. So, you know, I think it's really special, and I actually missed the celebration, but because I was performing in a musical, I was doing Aida the musical, so I missed the celebration. But, you know, just, you know, all the series on YouTube that show Kenny teaching, and you know the amount of music that he has on Spotify too, you know, so it's just so much to go back to, and it's such a beautiful thing to be a part of a program that you know understands and respects our artists, our jazz artists, and you know, like it's just so much for me that I can still learn, and that's the thing about this program. It's really humbling for me, because you know, no matter how much you know, you can always take more from this culture. There's so much, you know, so much history, so many great people, and you know, we're honored that, you know, to be connected with someone like Kenny Barron, you know, who, you know, like you said, has won numerous awards and has been recognized for his contributions and his amazing music, and also his teaching, which has in turn came down to has been passed down to Eli, and the work that Eli does, you know, is a reflection of what he's learned from Kenny, which is beautiful.
Checks in the mail.
I like how you just kind of threw in, oh, yeah, and I was doing Aida, by the way. It's just like it was, you know, just some small little show. Kenny, I'm going to turn it to you now, because when you hear Brian Fender speak about his love for this music that he wasn't really a part of when necessarily growing up and now has become really involved in jazz, what does he symbolize to you?
Well, it means that he's been exposed to the music, and once you're exposed to the music, you love it. And then you want to expose other people to it, and you want to give back, you know. And I think that's part of the process they're both involved in, Eli and this young man. They're both giving back. And one of the things I was really taken with at the celebration was the enthusiasm of the students. I mean, they really loved what they were doing. Mm. And I think that's in large part to these two gentlemen, that these students are so enthused about what it is they're doing. And they're really having fun doing what they're doing. So there's passion involved. There's love for what they're doing. And I think that's important.
Who have you mentored through the years that said, that's Kenny Barron, that's me. I can see myself in that individual. Have you come across somebody through the years that you've been teaching that really reminded you of yourself?
Oh, they're all better than me. So.
Yeah, hardly.
Yeah. But I've mentored quite a few people. Well, Eli for 4 years, Ralph Peterson, Harry Pickens, Terrence Blanchard. They were all students of mine at Rutgers. Aaron Parks was a student of mine at Manhattan School of Music. Gerald Clayton was a student of mine at Manhattan.
How has teaching changed your thought process as a musician?
Well, one of the things it does is that it reminds you that you don't know everything. That's the first thing that happens. When you hear some of these students and they play so well and they're so industrious about what they're doing, you know, and it makes you take a second look at yourself. So, wait a minute now. I need to step up my game a little bit. You know, so I learn a lot from them. And I think that's the main thing. It's a learning process. I mean, I'm the teacher, but they have something to share. And I'm more than willing to take it from them.
Let's talk about, before we get more into the Jazz Power Initiative, I want you to tell me, when you think about your career, is there a moment you can look at and say, this was the time that I knew I was going to become pretty darn good at this? Was there a moment that was on stage that it signaled to you that you were going to have a long career in this jazz?
Well, I mean, there were moments that made me realize that this was what I wanted to do, for sure. I can't tell you what that moment was, because there were many, you know. Usually there were situations where the playing was so good, or the band would strike such a groove, and you said, this is what I want to do. I remember one night working with Freddie Hubbard at Slugs, and the music was just so incredible. This is what I wanted to do. Working with Yusef, the same thing happened. This is what I want to do. I want to do this, you know. And it's a kind of a spiritual thing that happens, you know, when you're playing, and the band just kind of lights up. It's just you kind of transcend, so to speak. And I wish I could bottle that, but that's the one thing. You try and reach that level all the time, and you can't. I mean, because it's impossible. But that's what you're aiming for, and that's the thing that keeps you striving, keeps you studying, keeps you practicing, because you want to reach that level. You want to feel that again. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's almost like rapture. Mm. You know, and you aim for that. You want to feel that. Mm. So that's the thing that keeps me going. You know, and even at 76 years old, I'm still trying to find that.
Mm. We're speaking with the great Kenny Barron. Eli Yeaman and Brian Fender were talking about the Jazz Power Initiative. Eli, how tough of a teacher was he?
Well, he was actually very easygoing. And in his quiet way, pushed me to find myself and just see, you know, how much information was in front of me that I could explore, but he never made me feel overwhelmed by it or intimidated by it, as other teachers did. Mm. His mastery is so seemingly effortless, you know, that he gave me the space to know that that's how you can be with a lot of technical information, and that's really the goal, is to be easeful, not to be uptight, not to be worried or overly concerned. Am I good enough? You know, but just to be yourself. And when you asked him before about his students reflecting him, I wasn't surprised that it was hard. He's worked with so many amazing musicians that he mentioned, but each one of them is their own unique voice. And I'm sure that Kenny's teaching helped each one of them find their own unique voice. And so it's not surprising. It doesn't sound like Kenny Barron, but Kenny was part of that process of helping them get there, and that's what he did for me.
Was that your goal?
That was my goal, yes. Thank you, Eli.
Thank you.
I guess you did your job, Kenny. Brian Fender, working with Eli Yeaman on this, as you mentioned, you know, you weren't first exposed to jazz, but what is it about this music that really got you going? And, what, you know, what was the, because we always try to find that at WBGO, right? We always are looking for people to really experience jazz for the first time. And the words that Gary always says in the morning, Gary Walker, you know, and he quotes some people, once you're exposed to jazz, you know, you usually don't lose jazz as a fan. How about you?
Yeah, so I feel like, you know, even when I was younger, my parents definitely did keep jazz around. You know, I did listen to a lot of Ella Fitzgerald, and even as I got into musical theater, listening to, like, Black and Blue and Fats Waller's Ain't Misbehavin' and things like that. But I think taking Eli's class really made me appreciate the actual history, the culture, and what it represents, and also connecting the dots of American music. So I think it's important when we talk about American music and jazz and all of these things, we don't forget about the history and the things that, you know, the oppression that early slaves, Africans and African Americans went through in order to cultivate this sound, you know, taking it from field hollers and ring shouts to, you know, what the church and then, you know, New Orleans, Congo Square, and having this melting pot that really, you know, the heart and soul really come from African American slavery. So it's important to acknowledge that, and it's important for all of us to understand our history and culture, and especially as someone who deeply loves music, to connect all of these things that we see that are so separate. But I think Eli said it once, where that country ain't nothing but blues with a twang. You know, hip-hop is founded off the back of jazz music. When you think about it, jazz and disco, really, when it comes to sampling the music. But just like jazz, hip-hop was also, you know, cultivated by African-Americans out of oppression. So I think that it's very important for, I'm a history buff. It's important for everyone to really understand the history of the music and of the people who helped to cultivate this music, and also understand that, you know, there's a connecting spirit with us as Americans when we hear certain sounds that really, if we think about it, before this music was foreign to us, but now it's like ingrained in our DNA and we don't know how to explain it. But really it is, I mean, at the essence of it, it's blues music. It's and jazz is, I feel like, blues taken to the next level when it comes to like almost like this awakening, this enlightenment in the brain, where if you have blues representing the struggle, you have jazz representing this sort of freedom. Which I think is really beautiful. And for me, it's like there's always something new to learn in jazz. Whereas, you know, sometimes you listen to a pop song and it's like, well, I understand that structure. I know what they're about to sing again. I know what that melody is going to be again. Versus you listen to someone like Kenny Barron. You listen to someone like Wynton Marsalis. You listen to someone like Eli Yeaman. You listen to someone like Antoinette Montague. You can talk about everyone in jazz, but it's about them being an artist and really like pushing boundaries musically instead of trying to stay in the confined box that you get through pop music, which I think is something that I've been eating for most of my life. So, you know, having this more substantive type of food for me is, you know, just transforming me as an artist, and I'm able to see how that can also help younger kids as well, you know, just going into different schools, thanks to Jazz Power, going into different schools, talking about music like in a way how I'm talking about it now, and then putting on an actual song and allowing kids to challenge themselves, like, what are you really hearing? What do you hear? What are the instruments you're hearing? How does it make you feel? A lot of things that I've learned from Eli, which, you know, has transformed my whole perspective when it comes to thinking about music.
Has it helped you as an actor?
Oh, 100%. Especially as a musical theater performer, but as an actor, I think, you know, there's music in the way we speak, there's music in the way we breathe, we live, the way we connect to each other, and you know, I especially when you're trying to tell another story or someone else's story, you know, there's a rhythm, and I think that jazz is probably the most lively music just because it explores so many different parts of the psyche when you think about it. When you think music theory wise, it's just, you know, just an abundance of so complex, you know. When you think, you know, sonically, you're also being affected in so many different ways by the different instruments, and you can really hear the raw feeling versus, you know, things that are more digitalized nowadays. If three horns are harmonizing, it's not the same as three computerized compressors harmonizing. It's just not the same feeling. So, you know, as an actor, as a musician, it's an awakening, because jazz kind of pinches you and reminds you that you're alive. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if y'all get the same feeling, but it is kind of like, hey guys, we're alive. Like, even when we're working with the kids, it's and they're doing this music, you could see their spirits awakening. You could see their eyes opening up when they're really connecting, you know?
He's not into it, is he, Kenny?
No, not at all. No, he's definitely into it.
When he says about feeling alive, you know that feeling for a long time.
Yeah, and that's very, very true. I think the essence of music for me is about how it makes me feel as a listener and as a performer. You know, for me, it's about that. How does it make you feel?
And how does it make you feel?
You know, different things, you know, but it's about an emotional connection, more so than an intellectual one. I mean, that's my personal opinion, you know. So for me, when I'm playing, one of the things I want to do, hopefully, is make an emotional connection with the listener, you know, and I think that's really important, you know.
So let's say you're having a really bad day.
Which happens.
It does, right? And you sit down and you start to play. Does the transformation happen quickly, that the joy of being able to play the way you can change your mood, or what? Or you go with the mood and that makes you play differently?
There's a lot of variables involved, you know. No, it doesn't always happen right away. If you're playing with the rhythm section, a lot depends on who you're playing with. You know, as a pianist, a lot depends on the instrument. You know, you'd be surprised how important that is. You know, but one of the things I have learned is that when you feel like you're playing bad, and this is something I tell my students, I need to take that advice myself, the audience doesn't know what your intentions are, you know? So the audience responds to what they hear. Only you know what your intentions are. So when you feel like you're playing badly, they don't really know what you mean to say. Again, they respond to what you did say. So it's just something to bear in mind, so that you don't beat yourself up. You know. So there are good days and there are bad days.
I get it. Eli Yeaman is the artistic director and co-founder of the Jazz Power Initiative. Brian mentioned that he's a history buff. You know, we hear a lot that kids don't care about their history. But obviously, JPI is changing that thought process too, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, keeping the masters central in our conversation, you know, whether it's someone like Kenny who's here with us, or some of the great masters of the past like Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, Bessie Smith, Billie Holiday, we try not to just have one special day to talk about these different people, but integrate them into the conversation mm-hmm. like they're our friends. I mean, and that's, you know, since I was fortunate to meet Kenny as a teenager and then work with him as a college student, he would tell me about playing with Dizzy Gillespie. When I got my first teaching job, teaching nursery school music at the West Side Y in New York City, I didn't know anything about teaching nursery school kids, but I put a poster of Dizzy Gillespie up, and it was this. He had this great African outfit, and I used to pray to Dizzy in the morning. I'd say, Dizzy, will you please tell me what to do with these nursery school kids? And I would hear his voice saying, why don't you do Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens, Louis Jordan, or Ooshooby Dooby Means I Love You. And I found different songs from jazz, from the tradition. I didn't have to, like, dumb it down for these kids. But I found, you know, using these guides, you know, whether I conjured them or whether they actually spoke to me in the flesh, I tried to bring jazz to life for young people in a way that, you know, just find the right tunes that speak to the kids. Find the stories. Like, people love to hear about how Dizzy Gillespie was kind of a troublemaker at school. He was getting into trouble, but then he they used to sing. He went to a segregated school in North Carolina. They used to sing Lift Every Voice and Sing, the Black National Anthem. He loved that song, and that kind of got him hooked into music. So I try to find little stories like that about these young people. You know, Thelonious Monk, when he was a teenager, went on the road to play in a tent revival show down south. And they had a piano. They put it on a truck. And, you know, the kids can kind of envision that, you know, or Bessie Smith singing on the street with her brother. She used to dance, 13, 14 years old. And then she got discovered, went on the road with a show. So you can bring these people to life in a way that young people can relate to them. And that's how, I mean, when I worked here at WBGO, I remember Dizzy being here for interviews. And I remember how funny he was, you know. Mm-hmm. He was just, and he used to make fun of some of the younger jazz musicians for being so serious all the time, you know. But there's just this joy that these elders carry. Mm. And that if we can share just a little piece of that, and have people taste that, these young people, they'll be hooked, you know. But we can't make it this dry, pedantic thing. We have to make it this thing that celebrates life.
Mm-hmm. It's storytelling, you know, through the music, through that we remember. I remember 102-year-old John Ellerby on my sports podcast, Sports Jam. He was related to Diz, and he talked about this young boy always carrying the trumpet around with him. He goes, but they didn't feed him enough. He would always come around, and we'd have these huge vats of salmon and rice, and he'd always want to come over, but he never left that trumpet from his arm. You know, mm-hmm. Just those little stories. Yeah. I want to know, the first time you went to see Kenny Barron, what you were thinking, how nervous you were, and how did that go?
The first time I went to a lesson?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Kenny had this amazing way of just somehow making me feel comfortable. I don't know how he did it.
Come on, be honest now. You were scared to death.
No, I don't remember. Maybe I should have been. But we had two pianos, or sometimes he had a keyboard and a piano, and we would play. And he had this unbelievable acceptance. So even though I hardly knew anything, somehow I would manage to get through a tune because Kenny would make it sound good. And it was just very encouraging. I've had other teachers of that. I've had other band leaders, real taskmasters, and they inspire fear. That never worked too well for me, so I was very lucky to meet Kenny Barron.
You know, my own particular thing about teaching is that you should allow students space. You know, and fear is not a good thing, no matter what. So it's about learning to express themselves and allowing them the space to do that. So we would play, and I found that the best way for me to hear what the students need, you know, listening to them play, and I can respond to that. You know, why don't you try this or try that, you know, try this voicing the chords like this, or what about your touch, you know, if you're playing a ballet, you don't want to play too hard, you know, things like that. You know, so that's what worked for me as a teacher.
We're celebrating 40 years here at WBGO this year and 15 years for the Jazz Power Initiative. There are a lot of, you know, initiatives that happen along the way that don't have that kind of staying power. So in your opinion, Kenny, this Jazz Power Initiative, why is it working for so long?
It's working, I think, because of, first of all, because of the stuff that Eli is doing, you know. When he first told me what he was doing, and I sort of about the writing the jazz operas and things like that, I thought that was incredible. And then to see what the enthusiasm of the students, I mean, he's really reached them. He's really reached them. That's so important. And not only musically, but it's been proven that kids who study music do better academically. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's important, you know. They get into learning about discipline because they want to study. They want to get things right. So that's an important aspect of what they do. So I think that's part of the success that they've had.
Brian, somebody comes up to you and says, I'm into hip-hop, but I don't really know that much about jazz and blues, and I don't know if I want to be a part of this program, but you seem pretty cool. So at least tell me why I should be there.
Well, the first thing I would really say is that, you know, you have to take into consideration that hip-hop, it comes out of jazz. I always tell my students, if hip-hop had a daddy, the daddy's name would be jazz, because, you know, that's just what it is when you think about, you know, the rhythms and swinging, you know. And me and Eli had a conversation about swing and how you hear, you know, the influence of swing in hip-hop. I think that it's, you know, hip-hop is really interesting because, you know, you also combined, like, it's poetry, it's moving poetry, it's rhythmic poetry, but it's really interesting that some of the complexities and the rhythms that a lot of rappers will use, you can also hear in a lot of jazz records and a lot of instruments. You know, one thing right now is that's becoming popular is the is like triplets, like a triplet rhythm. So if rappers were rapping like ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's something that, I mean, many jazz musicians have heard in many jazz records, or many people have heard in many jazz records. There's just so many, I think, similarities, and especially if you think about the beginning of hip-hop, which was, and even now, some of the best hip-hop records, in my opinion, are sampled from jazz records, whether it be Dizzy Gillespie or Nina Simone, or Duke Ellington, taking samples from those songs, and then just a rapper being able to reimagine that, you know, that landscape of music that was created for them, and even though they're taking a small section. So I like to, you know, make examples like that. Like, for example, I like it like that, Cardi B just sampled, I'm blanking on the original, Tito Puente. Was the original singer artist on that record. And, you know, that in itself, it's a Latin jazz record. It combines a lot of different elements, but a lot of kids don't even know that Cardi B song came out of that. So I like to bring up that example and say, you know, hip hop is constantly inspired, and especially by jazz music. You know, I think another big thing, and I was kind of getting into it earlier, is that, you know, both of these things stem from oppression, which, you know, it was people in very difficult situations. So for hip hop, you know, coming out of the Bronx, where you have, you know, landlords burning down their buildings, and, you know, music education being taken out of the community because it wasn't really something that, you know, they thought was important for, you know, underprivileged areas. So these kids had nothing to look up to celebrate, to have any type of life or joy, because everything around them was just so desolate. So, you know, then you have, you know, the hip hop pioneers, you know, bringing the communities together through these parties where they're taking jazz records, they're taking disco records, they're scratching them up, and they're putting, you know, bass and drum behind it. Which is something that comes from reggae music, the idea of using bass and drums. So they're really combining this idea of bass and drum, taking disco records or jazz records and putting those melodies that come from those disco or jazz records, or and sometimes vocals, over this drum and bass, and it, you know, amps people up, just kind of this natural, like, groove that was created. But I think we always have to remember, you know, those connections, and also be aware that a lot of the earlier hip hop artists were inspired by jazz and also soul and R&B, which is also coming from jazz, you know.
I guess getting to know you a little bit during this interview makes me realize how important it was for you to be in Spike Lee's Black Klansman then, right?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, something that I'm very proud of is, like, most of the acting or performance work that I've done is something of very high significance to society in terms of, like, it's art with a purpose. It has a message and it means something. And you know, I feel everything happens for a reason. So because I've been blessed and honored to be a part of so many really cool projects like that, it makes my mission and my purpose more clear of why I am where I am and what I was put on this earth to do. And it's really spread love and positivity through art, and jazz is so essential to our culture and our identity in America that, you know, kids shouldn't be robbed of the opportunity of learning about their heritage and instead learn something like, you know, classical music or more Eurocentric things, more Eurocentric styles of dance. Because, you know, even when it comes down to it, it's not just about even the music that we're playing, but it's about the dance and how we talk about the culture of dance. Because even that, when you think about it, we look at jazz dancers and a lot of that, you know, the popular ones were white men on Broadway. And we can't forget about people like Bill Bojangles and Norma Miller, people who really, you know, helped cultivate so much when it comes to tap, swing, when it comes to shuffling, all these different styles that hip hop helped create, that is also now reflected that jazz helped create, that is now reflected in hip hop music.
What's the next project for Kenny Barron?
I don't know yet. well, one of the things is doing a trio recording project with Dave Holland and Jonathan Blake. So I think that's probably going to be the next project.
Now, you've worked with Dave before, and so what is it about him that you enjoy playing with him?
Well, it's intonation and his sense of swings, you know, and there's also a sense of adventure, which I happen to love very much.
I want to know, any concert, any time, go back in time, that you want to be sitting in the audience, not playing, but sitting in the audience and watching. Is there a certain concert that you would have loved to have been to?
A certain concert? I don't know about concert, but there are certain groups I would have loved to have heard.
All right, that's good enough.
I always wanted to hear live, and I didn't get to hear the full group live. Miles with Philly Joe and Red Garland and Paul Chambers. I never got to hear that group live, and I would have died to hear that group live. I mean, that was just such a, they did everything right. I mean, you know, everything, you know. And I did get to hear the group with Herbie and Ron and Tony and Wayne. It was at a matinee. And the Village Vanguard used to have matinees years ago on Sundays. And Miles didn't show up. So I got to hear the quartet. They played quartet, and it was incredible. It was incredible. You know, so there are a few other things I would like to have heard, you know. I never heard Sonny Rollins live, believe it or not. Mm. You know. So there's some other things I wanted to hear live, but there's so much music, you know, that I missed. You know.
One thing you don't want to miss is the upcoming performances for the Jazz Power Initiative, and that is Nora's Ark, the jazz musical. Eli, once again, tell us about this coming up this weekend.
Sure. We're so excited to produce Nora's Ark, the jazz musical, by myself and Clifford Carlson. It'll be performed by teenagers, middle school and high school students from Jazz Power Youth Workshop, and it'll be this Sunday, June 23rd at 3 p.m. at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem, which is located at 58 West 129th Street at Lenox Avenue. And we thank National Jazz Museum in Harlem for being our great partner. And also we'll be performing at Iglesia Presbyteriana Monday, June 24th at 7 p.m. That's at 21 Wadsworth Avenue near 175th Street in Washington Heights. We're going to have a professional jazz band with Mark McGowan on the trumpet and Chris Byers on saxophone and flute, Adi Meyerson on bass, and Dave Gibson on the drums. Dave, you may know from playing with Frank Foster's big band and the Count Basie Orchestra and Duke Ellington Orchestra. Really excited to have this band supporting our young people. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And July 17th and 18th, too, right? At Lehman College in the Bronx, you have an event, too.
Yes. Coming up on July 17th and 18th, we'll be doing our fifth annual Jazz Power Institute. And this is where we train teachers and teaching artists on how to teach jazz across discipline. So we'll be dealing with writing, dance, and singing primarily. And we have a special guest, James McBride, the award-winning author and musician, will be presenting. And also two founding members of Sweet Honey in the Rock, Carol Maylard and Louise Robinson, will be our guest teaching artists. We'll have 2 days, July 17th and 18th at Lehman College, and registration is free. There's only a couple spots left by going to jazzpower.org. And if you can't get registered, send us an email and tell us why you want to come, and we'll try to make space for you. info@jazzpower.org.
Kenny and I were talking about having busy schedules, especially when teaching. When do you sleep?
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate to be in a place where I can focus my time on running this organization, Jazz Power Initiative. There were times when I was working for five different organizations and playing gigs all over the place, and that was more difficult in managing my time than now, when I get to really, really focus. And I used to, for a period of time, I was touring with the U.S. Department of State, so I was traveling, I was teaching. Now I'm really focused on Harlem, Washington Heights, making sure jazz is available to young people, making sure it's available in the community, raising money so that we can pay artists well and they can be treated with respect and presented in a way that respects the art form. And so it's a blessing, and it's a balance.
For these kids, these newer kids, the program, to have this experience of performing and sharing this idea in front of an audience, you know, one of the biggest things that I tell them is to remember what the story is about, remember the story we're trying to tell, which is about climate change, which is something that's really deeply going to affect all of us for a long time, and that we should take a lot of thought and energy into coming together and trying to figure this problem out. So, you know, I want the kids to embody the message and carry it them in their lives. And, you know, I'm sure that a lot of them are able to articulate it very well. And, you know, I hope the audience is also able to experience, you know, the power of not only just that, but the growth that they've taken in understanding things like climate change and understanding things like teamwork and collaboration, that all of that is reflected, because these 12 weeks were really magical and transformative. And, you know, I don't like to put too many things like, oh, this person has this type of thing, or this kid is learning slower than the rest, or anything like that. I like to, you know, look at these young humans as just that. They're young humans, and they're growing, and they're going to experience different things. And the biggest thing is to, you know, inspire them to be their best selves. And I would say that I'm proud across the board of all of these kids. So I hope everyone can come out and really see the work that they have done, and, you know, the impact that jazz has had on their lives.
Speaking of inspiration, someone who's been an inspiration to all of us here at WBGO, Dorthon Kirk, joining you, Kenny, as an NEA Jazz Master. As Dorthon Kirk is one of the select people this year in the 2019 class. Any thoughts on Dorthon joining this prestigious group?
Oh, I think it's well-deserved. Well-deserved. I mean, she's been such an advocate for the music, so it's certainly well-deserved.
I'd just like to add my congratulations to Dorthon Kirk, who I know as Ma Kirk, because when I came to WBGO 18 years old, she became a second mom to me and helped show me how to produce concerts and just believe in this music. And she's one of the reasons why I kept going and why I founded Jazz Power Initiative. And I just want people to know, you know, anybody listening, you know, if you're somebody who looks around and says, you know what, there's not enough jazz in my community, you're probably right, and you can do something about it. Mm. And you can try to organize a series, or you can get into your library, you know, propose a workshop. You can try to get a weekly jam session going on at the cafe on the corner. You can talk with the school about using the auditorium. You might even be able to create a musical, and you'll be amazed by how much people will come to the water to drink. So please do what you can, because if we all do it together, we can make jazz much more available to a lot more people, and we can make this world a better place to live in.
Eli Yeaman, Brian Fender, and of course, Kenny Barron. What an honor to have all three of you here on the WBGO Journal.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I see blue, the skies are clear. Do not fear. Start again with freedom and love. All of us singing in the sun. I see blue, the storm is on. Let's move on. A new world, exciting and free. All of us dancing in the sun.